Charles Darwin was born in England on February 12th of 1809. And here's a little factoid for you. It was also the same day that Abraham Lincoln was born. And there are a couple of people who have had a tremendous influence on life as we know it. And we're going to zero in on one of those guys today, Charles Darwin. Darwin's observations in natural history and his evolutionary theory transformed biology and related sciences, I guess, like no other idea. And many groups have celebrated his life and begun to celebrate his life even a bit more. And we have a couple of people with us in the studio today. Dana Geary, professor of geology and geophysics at the UW-Madison, is chair of a Darwin Day Symposium. It's on the UW-Madison campus coming up February 10th. And we'll give you some more information about that as we go along here. Jeff McKinnon is a professor and undergraduate research program coordinator in the Department of Biological Sciences at the UW-Whitewater. And he's in charge of their 9th annual symposium, and that's coming up Thursday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m. in Young Auditorium at the UW-Whitewater. And either of these events, and I know there's another event at the UW-Milwaukee, we can talk about that as well, of any of those events or any others for that matter, are open to the public. And you have a chance to come and hear some very interesting people talk about Charles Darwin and talk about the research that he did, the work that he did, and how it applies today. So we're pleased to have our two guests with us. And you might have a question maybe about the symposiums, maybe questions about Darwin himself or what he thought or how he thought. You're most welcome to join in. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Dana Geary, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And Jeff McKinnon, thank you so much for being with us as well. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks for having me here.
I tell you what, let's talk about why it's important to celebrate Charles Darwin's life. And we'll get both your perspectives. Jeff, maybe we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, the thing is that there's a lot of confusion, I think, in the public sphere about evolution, what evolution is, and what the scientific views are on it. And that's unfortunate because it's not just a philosophical issue. I mean, it is an important philosophical issue, but evolution really matters day to day. It's a critical topic in medicine. It's a critical topic in agriculture. And so it's a matter of billions of dollars to our economy, of many lives and deaths. And so I think we need to clear up some of the misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm. Dana, comment from you?
Oh, of course, I agree with everything Jeff said. It's Darwinian thinking is just the foundation for all of biology. There's no way to understate it or overstate it. Darwin understood things and presented his case so completely, and everything we've learned since Darwin just reinforces his view. And so evolution is provides the context and a really deep historical explanation for everything around us. So it's important for everyone.
I don't think he was the first person to espouse evolutionary ideas. So why is his place in history so enduring? Dana?
Well, he really did his homework. He not only understood that evolution had occurred, but he worked out a mechanism, natural selection, for how it had occurred. And then he figured that out by 1838, a couple years after he returned from his voyage in the Beagle. But he didn't publish The Origin of Species for more than 20 years after he figured it out. And so in that time, he considered every possible weakness, every possible counter-argument. He amassed a mountain of evidence. And so he just did a really thorough job of presenting his case and bringing in all kinds of evidence, from pigeons to plant breeding to earthworms to the rock record, everything.
So I'd add a little bit to that. So the one really critical contribution was to put together all the evidence. So folks kind of had the idea that maybe evolution had occurred, it was around, but he put it all together. And then beyond that, what natural selection did was accounted for adaptation. So there was no explanation beyond divine action of the apparent fit of organisms to their environments, why organisms seem to be so well suited to the tasks they have to do to survive. And so natural selection provided a mechanistic, physical explanation for that phenomenon. And now we could account for the diversity of life and other features of organisms without recourse to divine activity.
Hmm. What kind of a guy was he like? I mean, obviously he was meticulous, pretty meticulous guy. Do we know much about what his life was, what he was like as a guy? He was married, kids, and he...
Yeah, he was a very devoted father. One of his great regrets in his life was that one of his children in particular died very young, and he always worried that this was a sacrifice to his own marital happiness. He'd married his cousin, and he worried that little bit of inbreeding had contributed to the death of his child. And so that upset him terribly. A very devoted family man. Interesting that he was born on the same day as Lincoln, because he also was very concerned about slavery. So he thought that was a terrible problem. I just gave one of my students The Voyage of the Beagle to read, and this is something he noticed in reading The Voyage of the Beagle.
Yeah, he was. I read that as well a long time ago. I'm trying to dredge up some of my memories from it. I remember his child, one of his kids, visiting another family and asking why the father wasn't doing his specimens in the morning, because it was something that Darwin did every day of his life, I guess.
Yeah, he had the luxury, really, from our point of view, of when he got back from his voyage on the Beagle, a five-year voyage that he started when he was 22. He married. He was very careful thinking about this. He made himself a list, reasons for getting married, reasons against getting married, finally decided to get married. As Jeff said, they had 10 children, and three of them died rather young, which was really tragic for them, of course. But basically, he lived out his life outside of London in a very...
monastic, in a way.
Right, a wonderful setting, and he pursued, you know, a variety of biological activities and corresponded.
There's a new book out titled Pigeons, and it's a story of pigeons, and the author of that book told me on the air that Darwin became quite a pigeon fancier. He used pigeons for his work, but then he came to kind of love pigeons and raise them for fun as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an interesting guy. Dave in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. I'm just wondering, they mentioned the death of a child. I think it was his daughter. I'm wondering how the death of the daughter and his wife's faith, I think she was a Christian believer, how that affected his willingness to publish these things, and if it was delayed for any reason because he was just afraid that... his findings might affront the Christian community.
Well, I think that was a big part of why he put things off so long, is because he didn't want to upset anybody.
You know, including his wife.
Including his wife. He's a very, I think, by all accounts, kind of a gentle, decent person. And he didn't want to cause a lot of upset in his family or elsewhere. And, of course, he was trained as a minister. That was his background. So, you know, this was all a little bit upsetting to him as well in some respects, I think.
Mm-hmm. I have read and heard that that it was the death of his daughter. She was 10 at the time, and just the apple of his eye. That this was a huge blow to him. And I think some people have written that the faith that he had might have been severely challenged by her death.
Hmm.
Ironically, the day his ideas were presented to the public, which was an event that was really precipitated by Alfred Russel Wallace discovering natural selection in 1858. And so anyway, the day that these ideas were presented, Darwin could not attend that meeting because that's when his son died at the age of 2 from scarlet fever.
Oh, boy.
So...
Dave, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the call very much. By the way, if you'd like to join in with your own question, we haven't gotten to the symposiums yet, but I promise you we'll get to those and pretty quickly here. But if you have some questions about those symposia, or if you have questions about Darwin or his thinking and thoughts on evolution, please feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And so when were the now Whitewater has been doing a symposium for 9 years. Has this been even go back beyond 9 years? Do you know from?
Well, folks have done this kind of thing on Darwin's birthday on and off at various times over the years. I think in terms of the sort of recent resurgence of this activity, it started to get going around the time that we did. So I know Tennessee started an event like this around that time, and they've been kind of picking up steam around the country since around when we started.
And Dana, I'll turn to you first next for just a what's the your symposium all about? You're leading a great symposium.
Right. Basically, it's about just reaching out to the public and telling them some of the things going on in evolution research and just trying to bring them up to date and also trying to convey to the public some of the reasons why evolution matters in their lives. So we have a different format from last year. We have speakers in the morning and then a series of posters or interactive displays, we're calling them, in the afternoon at the Geology Museum.
And anyone is invited to attend that?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's really aimed at the public.
Oh, yes. And what we're trying to do, even the speakers in the morning are going to limit their presentations to 30, 35, maybe 40, 30 or 35 minutes so that we have a good 20, 25 minutes for questions and interaction with the audience after each talk. And then in the afternoon, it's all meant to be about interaction and communication.
And some of the titles of those presentations in the morning, just to give us a flavor?
Sure. In the morning, Jenny Bauman, a zoology professor, and Elliot Sober, a professor of philosophy here at UW-Madison, are going to talk about irreducible complexity and the human eye. Then Brett Pasier from genetics in Madison is going to talk about DNA and human evolution. And then our third speaker is Michael Muhlenbein from UW-Milwaukee, and he's going to talk about an introduction to evolutionary medicine.
And we'll get to Jeff in just a minute to have him talk, but I want to get a couple of other callers online. Dick in Springfield, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Those of us who have very little time to read anything, I was wondering if your folks could recommend one or two books, both in the biographical area of the man's life, but also, you know, related to his technical stuff, but secondary sources as opposed to primary. And there's so much spin in the world nowadays, it's hard for us laymen to go out and just pick something.
Sure.
Yeah. My favorite book about Darwin or books is a two-part biography by Janet Brown. The first part is called Voyaging and covers in detail Darwin's early years and his voyage on the Beagle. And it's just, it's so engaging. It's a fabulous book. And don't recall at the moment what the title of the second book is, but they're by Janet Brown. It's a two-part biography of Darwin.
Does it get into it deals with his scientific as well as his personal life?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And Jeff, what about you? You got one off the top of your head?
Yeah. There's one, I think it's Desmond and Moore have a wonderful biography. The two fellows work together of Darwin, and I can't think of the title of it just now, but look for Adrian Desmond, and I think it's maybe James Moore. So keep an eye out for that one. The other thing I would suggest you do is read some Darwin. He actually had an autobiography. It's quite short and very readable. It's a delightful way to get a sense of the man. And The Voyage of the Beagle also has a certain amount of biology in it and is this kind of wonderful 19th century travelogue. So I'd really encourage you to look at that, too.
I like that.
I was trying to avoid the work of unusual use of English based on the era.
Oh, yeah. Well, The Voyage of the Beagle certainly is fine reading.
Yeah, it's delightful reading. The origin, gets a bit tough at times. The 1859 one is the best one. Later on, they got a lot longer and harder to read. But The Voyage of the Beagle is very nice reading.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And Mike in Plymouth, we'll go to you. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What a great program, man. And what a coincidence. I've been reading two books that I can recommend that I think are just great to bring the a semi-technical reader, a great defense and view of theory of evolution. One is Life on a Young Planet, The First 3 Billion Years of Evolution on Earth by Andrew Knoll. Just a terrific book, going back to essentially the beginning of Earth and the first hints of life, and then the complexity that followed. And the other is Climbing Mount Improbable by Richard Dawkins, which is a very spirited defense and explanation of evolution in dealing with some of the modern issues of the attacks on science by creationism and so forth. But those are two excellent books. They're both pretty accessible, and I think they're great.
The title of the second was, again?
Climbing Mount Improbable.
Oh, Climbing Mount Improbable. Okay.
Yeah, the idea is he's explaining the issue that creationists often bring up is how could we have such a complex organ as the eye, for example, if it wasn't created by a god. And he basically explains how through the random genetic changes and then natural selection could easily explain that. So great books.
And Jeff, have you had a chance to look at either of those books?
Or? Yeah, Climbing Mount Improbable I've read, and a couple of other great Dawkins books. And Climbing Mount Improbable in some ways builds on a slightly earlier one, The Blind Watchmaker, which is just a brilliant exposition of the arguments for evolution. And then another one, which is really fun and is much more about social evolution, social behavior, is The Selfish Gene, also just a wonderful book that was reissued a couple of years ago with some revisions.
I love Andy Knoll's book, Life on a Young Planet. That's a wonderful book. And can I also say that there's a new book published late in 2006 by Sean Carroll, who's a professor here at UW-Madison. Mm-hmm. And his new book is called The Making of the Fittest, DNA and the Ultimate Forensic Record of Evolution. And this is just a marvelous, marvelous book. It's, I think, accessible to a popular audience, but really... tells a spectacular story about the modern evidence.
And getting terrific reviews across the board.
Yeah.
So good on
you.
You stole my addition that I was going to add. I interviewed Sean on the program about his book, and it was he's a delightful guy to interview as well. So, Mike, I thank you very much. We have two guests for you today, as you're hearing. Dana Geary, professor of geology and geophysics at UW-Madison. And Jeff McKinnon, professor and undergraduate research program coordinator in the Biological Sciences Department for the UW-Whitewater. They're both chairing their respective symposiums celebrating the life of Charles Darwin. We're talking with them, and certainly if you want to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Celebrating the life of Charles Darwin with our two guests, Dana Geary from the UW-Madison and Jeffrey McKinnon from the UW-Whitewater. Pleased to have them along. And before we go back to the phones, Jeff, I want to give you a chance to talk about your symposium. Dana's is on February 10th, and yours is on Thursday, February 15th. So thankfully, they're not competing because people might want to attend both.
Yeah, I think they'd be very complimentary events. So ours is the latest in our series now, and this is going to be this year with Eddie Holmes, who's a professor in biology at the Center for Infectious Disease Dynamics at Penn State. And he is one of the very top people in virus evolution. And so his talk is going to be titled Life on the Edge, the Evolution of Emerging Viruses. And he'll be talking about the various recent viruses that have emerged causing problems that have made jumps between species, including HIV. He'll be talking about flu evolution, the potential for flu jumping between species, and those sorts of issues. And he's going to be great. He has a very good reputation for this kind of talk. And it's... really intended for the general public. So we love, for example, for high school students and teachers to come. A couple of years ago, Steve Palumbi was one of our speakers, and he donated copies of his books to the libraries of every school that came, which is
really
fantastic
cool.
thing to do. So he said, no, I'll take my honorarium, and I'll get my publisher to give you a deal and just buy copies of this book and give it away. So he's a good guy, and we really appreciated that. The other thing that happens at our event is... because we like grandiose claims, we have the world's largest edible tree of life. And we don't have a giant muskie out in front, so this is the best we can do. And what happens is the faculty and students, and I should mention that the Biology Honors Club is one of the key organizers for mm-hmm. this. So the faculty and students all bring desserts to, in the form of their favorite organisms. And then they lay them all out, and it's my task to arrange them into the correct evolutionary tree. And I draw the relationships of this giant piece of paper. It's all very silly, but it's pretty fun, and a lot of folks come. And now people from the community also bring their desserts.
Oh, that's great. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And I know just before we go to Eric here in West Salem, we did want to mention Milwaukee as well, because UW-Milwaukee is hosting an event as well. And Jeff, do you know the date of that? What's the date of that event? Do you have it?
Oh, geez, I've got the time here. It's at, what is the date? Dan, have you got it?
We'll find it out here. While they look, I'm going to go to Eric in West Salem. And if we don't, somebody from UW-Milwaukee should be calling us right now to tell us that date.
I've got it. It's February 11th.
February 11th.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is this Sunday, February 11th. And I can tell you a couple of things that are going on. So we're going to have a science brown bag session talking about these sorts of questions at 2 o'clock in Physics 137 at Milwaukee, an Evolution Matters poster session at 3:30 in the Lapham North foyer, and I think that'll also be talking about why evolution is important. They have a series of interactive presentations, and then they're going to have a screening of the movie A Flock of Dodos at 4:30, also at Lapham.
Okay, cool. And just to let you know, if you want to find out some more of all of the details of these events, you probably could just go on a search engine and type in UW Geology Darwin or UW Whitewater Darwin or UW Milwaukee Darwin, and you'll get it. But we will also have on our website, WPR.org, if you just go to that, click on my name, and we'll have those posted for you so you can find out all the information you need. Want to make sure it's as accessible as possible. And Eric, now, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Well, good morning. Fantastic show. Good morning to everybody. And I have a question and a comment. I'm 52. I was raised Lutheran. And I kind of bought the party line to a point. And then as I became more well-read and I had questions, you know, the layman couldn't answer, of course, I had to go to the books to kind of reconcile, you know, these differences between creationism and evolution. And during, you know, this path, I was put onto a book by Lloyd Pye called Everything You Know Is Wrong. And I would really appreciate it if either of your guests could comment on the book if they're familiar with it. And then the comment that I had was, right or wrong, where I've come down on this whole discussion, and I find it real interesting, you know, this battle that seems to always be ongoing between the creationists and the evolutionists, is that if you believe what I believe right now, they're both right. Mm-hmm. And that this reconciles, you know, these historic records that, you know, that they find scientists, mm-hmm. and also the biblical version of creation. Obviously, it's not exactly as it's laid out in the Bible, mm-hmm. but it's sort of the, what's the word for it? It was a parable of sorts that described what happened, but in a way that people could understand.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving it at that.
Yeah, I thank you very much for calling, Eric. And we should address that. The clergy letter would be a way to address that. Dana, do you want to comment on that?
Yes. Well, just in a general way, of course, there are many, many people for whom religion and an evolutionary point of view are compatible. And I think the quote that I would like to read comes from a clergy letter. I think many people are aware of what happened in Grantsburg, Wisconsin, in our own state. The school board considered teaching alternative theories of origins, but in the end was persuaded that this was not a good idea, including by a very persuasive letter written by a number of pastors from lots of different denominations, Baptists, Catholics, Lutherans, Methodists, a variety of Christian clergy got together and wrote a letter in support of teaching evolution. And since then, it's been signed by more than 10,000 clergy across the United States. And let me just read one part of this letter, because I think it's a very strong letter. They say, the clergymen write, "We believe that the theory of evolution is a foundational scientific truth, one that has stood up to rigorous scrutiny and upon which much of human knowledge and achievement rest. To reject this truth, or to treat it as, quote-unquote, one theory among others, is to deliberately embrace scientific ignorance and to transmit such ignorance to our children." So that's a fairly strong statement in support of evolution by a group of people who are also believers.
Religious. And there's an Evolution Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, too.
Yeah, and I would just note that been over 400 signers, I think it's over 400 now from Wisconsin of that letter as well. Mm-hmm. And the list is available on the web, so you can go and look and see who from your community might have signed it. And the clergy letter, excuse me, and Evolution Sunday were both initiated by Mike Zimmerman, who was at that time at UW Oshkosh, was a dean there. So those of us at universities who are skeptical administrators find this very warming. and I'm so proud that someone from Wisconsin started that. I just think that's just absolutely fantastic. And so we started with the clergy letter, and now Mike helped to get Evolution Sunday going, which is an event also around the time of Darwin Day, celebrated at churches around the nation. I think the number is like 400 or 500 now that are doing this, where basically people talk in churches about how evolution and science in general can be compatible with Christianity.
Mm-hmm. And Evolution Sunday this year is Sunday, February 11th.
Yes.
And you could, again, Google the clergy letter, and you'll come right to their website and learn all about it.
Yeah, although Mike makes the point that if you want to have it a week later or before, that's okay.
right. That's true.
Thanks, Eric.
Oh, and he asked about a book, but neither one of us has familiarity with that book.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, we don't know about that book, Eric. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. And Bob in Green Bay, it's your turn now. Bob, hello.
Hello. I just wanted to call and thank your guests for highlighting the importance of evolution in the world today. In particular, I have to agree with one of the very first opening statements that there is little true understanding of the real definition of evolution and the misconceptions that arise or have been promulgated not only by creation scientists but just by the general public as well. And I have just two brief items here, a question and a comment. First, the question that despite the efforts, you know, of our educators and scientists and even TV like the Science Channel, there's still, you know, beliefs in the supernatural explanations for the origins of Earth and its living beings still seem to overshadow the what I would consider overwhelming empirical data available. I mean, what are we doing wrong, and how do we counter this continuing trend?
Okay. Well, Dana, you want to take a crack at that?
It's hard to see, but I think clearly we are doing something wrong. I think scientists have to bear some of the responsibility, but because there does seem to be this huge gap in understanding. I just hope that scientists are seeing that there's this gap and we really need to bridge it in every way possible. The evolution community in Madison, for instance, has really gotten mobilized in the last few years to try to get the message out. Because as the caller said, the evidence is overwhelming. And you can look back in history and see so many examples of where science has made progress by rejecting supernatural explanations and dealing with real earthly ones, and all human beings have benefited from these scientific achievements. So there's a real need to proceed in a scientific way, but scientists have to do a better job as educators.
Mm-hmm. I think it needs to start a little earlier. So I do some work now with elementary and middle school teachers, and I think what we need to be doing is getting into our schools more of the scientific method right from very early on, and the notion that the way to answer questions is by collecting data and analyzing it carefully, and it doesn't matter all that much what the question is. And I think we need to kind of celebrate that view of the world and that approach and start doing it, you know, as early as possible. And I think that's going to help. We don't do that so much in our society.
Great. And just one quick comment to add to the previous caller's information regarding creation versus science. There's a symposium of another sort happening this weekend up here in Green Bay. And I think that anyone in the listening area who may have some free time this Friday through Sunday, who may be interested in learning more about what Darwinian evolution is not, should visit Bethel Baptist Church in Green Bay for the third annual Creation Science Conference. They're featuring Duane Gish, who is billed as the co-founder of the Creation Science Movement. So it should be sure would be nice to see a healthy contingent of rationally thinking individuals there this weekend.
Thank you very much, Bob, for calling. Appreciate your call. And well, Leroy's been waiting a long time from Livingston, so let's go there. Thank you very much for calling. Hi.
I appreciate you taking my call on a very interesting program that you have. I do have a question for your guest. Many years ago on television, there was aired a series of programs about Charles Darwin, the voyages. And I was wondering if they had any knowledge of this or if this was ever available on a tape.
Or on a DVD or something.
Yes.
There was a BBC series, and it was probably 20 years ago now.
At least.
And I've been trying to track that down myself, and I finally found a friend who promised to make a copy of the tapes, but that's my only line. I've been trying to track that down myself. I understand it was absolutely excellent.
It was superb. In fact, very recently, my wife and I had a comment, we'd like to sit down to the television set and be riveted to that, watching that again. It was superb.
Absolutely.
I'd be surprised if it's not on YouTube. So I'll bet it'll be available on the web before too long, if it isn't already. I remember that as well.
Yeah, and the BBC, you might kind of just contact via email the BBC directly and simply ask if it's available in DVD. And you know, given the sort of probably more interest now in a way than there was 20 years ago in Darwin, if I'm a production person at the BBC, I'm thinking this might be a way to make a couple dollars.
Absolutely, it would be great to re-release that.
Yeah, I would think you must be able to get it, but
I'll bet they've already got it in DVD. Yeah. I would just bet, and I just go online to the BBC and I send them an email and find out what happens. Thanks, Leroy. And Mary in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Whenever public radio has a program on evolution or genetics, evolutionary genetics, it seems that a great deal of time is spent by the scientists talking about creationism. And so you learn about creationism, but by not giving specific examples of evolution and evolutionary genetics, it diverts, you know, you end up not learning too much, because I can accept the Bible interpretation, but I'm also interested in the science. And I wish you'd, you know, the scientists would say, well, that's one way of looking at the beginning of the earth and how, but I think my idea is just as good.
I understand what you're saying. I wish you'd had been listening when I had Sean Carroll on talking about his book, because we, Making of the Fittest, because we talked about many, many examples in that particular program. And I guess we haven't talked about it here as much because we're trying to promote the symposiums. And so we've talked a little bit more in general terms about evolution, as opposed to going in on, you know, on the eye, for example, as you were talking about earlier, Jeff.
Yeah, well, I'll respond to her question briefly. So the point of our symposium is really to provide those sorts of examples. So we invite you to come to either one or the one at Milwaukee, and it would be great to have you there. So, you know, we're going to do a lot of that there. And when the students and I initiated the one at Whitewater, we really just didn't want to be arguing with folks about whether evolution happened or not. What we wanted to do was show some important work and show why evolution's important. So that was the approach we took, because it does get tiresome to be always arguing about whether it happened or not.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I'll give you one of my favorite examples of evolution is HIV, and this is again why evolution is important. It turns out that the reason it's difficult to treat HIV is because it evolves within individual patients. And so folks have taken and sequenced big chunks and maybe all of the HIV genome within individual patients over the course of infections. And it turns out that it evolves predictably over the course of an infection. It also evolves predictably in response to treatment. So you treat someone with AZT and it works for a while. The virus goes way down. Then after a while, the virus comes back. And often it's changed in a predictable way. So that's a wonderful example of selection acting to cause relatively deterministic evolution. That's economically and personally and, you know, important in every way to individual Americans.
It's a good example. I thank you very much, Mary, for calling. I appreciate your call very much. And I want to go back before we are out of time here. I wanted to go back and just sort of review again the symposium that are being held at UW-Milwaukee, UW-Whitewater, and UW-Madison. And Dana, just begin, since yours is first, the first one, it's February 10th. Tell us about that.
Sure. We have three talks in the morning about irreducible complexity in the human eye, about DNA, DNA and human evolution, and an introduction to evolutionary medicine. So the previous caller, I'm sure, would be really interested in all of those. And then in the afternoon, we have a series of displays that will be set up in the Geology Museum on campus. We haven't gotten to talk about that too much, but we have people from all over campus talking about everything from human evolution to the evolution of evolutionary trees to why flowers are beautiful, how do we know how old the earth is, various agricultural topics, all presented by people who are there, just happy to engage with the general public on these topics.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, at Whitewater?
At Whitewater, that's going to be Thursday, February 15th, and our talk is going to be at 7:30 p.m. That's going to be Eddie Holmes talking about life on the edge, the evolution of emerging viruses. He should be fantastic. At 6:45 in the lobby of the Young Auditorium, which is where everything takes place, we will have our reception with the world's largest edible tree of life.
Okay. And we know that February 11th, the UW-Milwaukee will also be sponsoring its symposium. And to find out more about any of these, just you can type in on a search engine the university itself and Darwin Symposium, and you'll get it. But also the easy way would be just to go to WPR.org. We'll have all of those websites up, and you will be able to click on those and go right straight to the source. Dana and Jeff, been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Dana Geary is professor of geology and geophysics at UW-Madison, and Jeff McKinnon is professor and undergraduate research program coordinator in the Department of Biological Sciences at UW-Whitewater. Please appreciated having them with us. And thank you for listening. And we're going to continue. We'll switch gears entirely and talk about investing next with Shannon Wegner. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.